Everyone, it's Jeremy Parrish to let you know about the latest patron-exclusive episode of Retronauts, which you can't miss, because its subject would not miss you. This episode is about Golgo 13, the long-standing Japanese pop culture icon, the assassin, the Japanese equivalent of James Bond, but way meaner. In honor of the recent passing of Golgo 13's creator, Takao Saito, I pulled together Diamond Fight and Matt Alt to talk about the legacy and history of the Golgo 13 franchise, its impact on pop culture, and, of course, the small but notable selection of Golgo 13 video games released throughout the years. This episode is available exclusively to Retronauts patrons who support us at the $5 a month or higher level, but, of course, that's not all you get for supporting the show. You get patron-exclusive episodes every other Friday, as well as every weekend with mini-podcasts by Diamond, Discord access, and a warm, fuzzy feeling of having done something good for the world by helping us make a great retro gaming podcast. If you enjoy the upcoming preview of this episode, you can download the full thing and listen to an hour and a half of our banter about Japan's deadliest assassin by going to patreon.com/retronauts and subscribing for $5 a month or higher. Thanks for listening, and please enjoy this sample.
They're working inside of a system, but using the system's tools against it in a lot of ways. And I think the student protesters definitely saw themselves that way. They were trying to seize, you know, college campuses and turn them into, you know, revolutionary centers or whatever the heck it was they were trying to do. They were trying to, you know, basically they weren't trying to completely destroy the system. They were trying to kind of remake it. And I think they kind of were nourished by the revolutionary sort of politics that were silently woven into all of these Gekiga.
And I will say that, you know, it's very interesting to go back and read the early volumes of Golgo 13. And when I was researching my NES Works episode on Top Secret episode, I looked around online and it turns out there are English translations of the first 25 stories of Golgo 13, however many chapters that is. And you can really see Saito kind of figuring out who this character was. Like, on one hand, he does come into the franchise, into the series, sorry, sort of fully formed. Like, he's already an established name. Like, people know who Golgo 13 is. They know that you put in a classified ad for him 13 in the newspaper, and then he will, you know, decrypt that and show up where you need to meet with him to hire him. But at the same time, they were still kind of figuring things out. So in the early volumes, Golgo 13 makes wisecracks sometimes, or brags a little bit, or, you know, insults people. He shakes hands with someone. He makes sloppy mistakes, like punching a prostitute in such a way that everyone in the hotel is like, whoa, something horrible happened here. And the police surround him and capture him and put him in prison. So
that's not very Golgo.
No, like he makes dumb, sloppy mistakes. And it's interesting because he makes these mistakes once and then he doesn't make them again. So he's like, it's kind of interesting because, you know, looking back, it kind of feels like, you know, the early volumes, he's a much more open and expressive character than in the stories that have mostly been localized. But you kind of get the sense that you kind of come in at a point in his career where he's established as, you know, someone formidable, someone that everyone fears, and they know that he can get the job done. But he's still kind of learning the ropes himself, and he's not infallible yet. He's not the perfect machine of snipe. He's the imperfect machine of snipe.
You sound like you're describing Saito himself. You know,
maybe
kind of getting into the,
maybe,
you know,
like,
well, it's not, I don't know how widely known this is abroad, but one of the big reasons that Golgo 13 was so successful and has continued for so long is that Saito was one of the first people to set up a kind of a production line. Mm-hmm. He left the Gekiga workshop pretty early on, I think somewhat to Tatsumi's dismay, because he had his brother, Saito's brother, was a kind of crack businessman and really kind of acted as Saito's manager. And when Saito would, you know, do something that hit, like, his brother would kind of push him in that direction. So he had kind of counsel, which is something that a lot of manga artists didn't. And then he set up this whole production system. Famously, I think toward the end of it, he's literally only drawing in the eyebrows. other people are just doing everything. Like, and he's involved in everything. This isn't
he's doing a lot of the plotting, I think. He was doing a lot of the plotting even at the end, just not as much of the drawing.
Even in this, as early as the 70s, I remember when I wrote about him on Twitter, Fred Schott, who wrote famously the book Manga, The World of Japanese Comics, he chimed in and posted a photograph he'd taken of Saito in his studio, like surrounded by assistants, and was reminiscing about how, you know, even back then, this was like really ahead of the curve. Now it's kind of understood. People use assistants when they get big, and especially when they get older. But like, Saito did it from the very beginning.
Yeah, he was kind of the Henry Ford of manga.
Yes.
Just create the assembly line. Yeah,
yes.
We should also point out, Saito Production, he founded that before Global 13 ever existed. So his sort of operation... it's not like he hit it big and then he needed a company to sort of get all this work done. Like, no, he got this thing going first. And then that's why even in the first issue, you'll see his name is in there. What's on the title page? It says, you know, it says it's his work, but it also says Saito Production and it has the, you know, the company logo there. So it was always a team effort.
Well, I'm sure he was taking a page from Mushi Pro, Tezuka, starting his own production company. Like, that was what you kind of did back then. It was sort of when you could be a manga artist and a mogul. Like, I think it's a lot more difficult to do that these days in the way that, like, Tezuka and these guys did. But I think it's just a testament to him and his brother being a kind of team, which is something you don't see a huge amount of in the manga industry.
I mean, he kind of, it's kind of the same system that Jim Davis set up with Garfield and Paws Inc., where, you know, how much of the Garfield comics does Jim Davis actually create these days? Probably about zero.
He only draws the whiskers.
Only the stripes. Yeah. You know, that system works, except that instead of creating a large cat making the same jokes over and over again, Saito created an implacable hitman killing people over and over again. You know, which
I can't believe
it's a different texture.
I can't believe you tied these together. I'm impressed. I'm impressed.
I'm on fire tonight.
I want the crossover. Maybe John.
I mean, they both start with G. G13. Who is it? We put in the, you know, the classified ad for him 13, and G13 showed up, but it was a cat.
And you have to pay him a lasagna. This is it, man. This is it. I got this. I'm going to hire some manga artists right now.
Never let a spider sneak up behind him.
Exactly. Oh man.
It doesn't take jobs on Mondays.
Okay. That's it. We just ended the podcast. Good Lord. There's just nowhere you can go from there. The Garfield Golgo 13 crossover.
Please enjoy our recent episode on Garfield video games put together by Bob Mackey. It's, you know, the grand unifying theory of Retronauts.